Welcome to Sunday Conversation. It's Janae Renee.
And Teddy Reese.
And this Sunday, we got a lot to talk about, but I guess it's really about last Tuesday, right?
Yes, Tuesday was a big day in America. We had our election day, and wow, were we surprised on so many different levels.
Right, I was going to say on so many levels. How did you feel when you woke up Wednesday? Because for me, I watched some of it, mm-hmm. and Trump was winning, mm-hmm. and I said, let me go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, when I wake up, things will be different. Of course, I woke up, you know, first thing you do, roll over, pick up your phone. I was like, what? Okay, we got a new president.
Yeah, I didn't go to sleep. I stayed up and watched the entire results, and because, you know, to me, this would be a moment in history.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a signifier on so many different levels, on where we're going as a country, where we're going as various political parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, you practically had a guy who's never served in public office before, nor has he served our military, and he was just elected president of the United States.
Yes.
Over an individual who's worked in some type of elected capacity or in government for at least 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it begs the question, you know, what happened? And there's so many things you can look at with the numbers. Like, we know that 9 million Democrats, less Democrats, voted in this election than they did in Obama's election. We do know that the only demographic that Hillary Clinton carried that mirrored Obama was black women that voted for her at 94% like mm-hmm. they did Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Her vote amongst black men was down. Her vote amongst Caucasians were down. Her vote amongst women was down. And all of that was strange in its own way.
Very strange. Yeah, it was strange.
Yeah,
was
and strange. So, you know, as we continue to crunch the numbers, you know, that there's a lot to learn from this situation and a lot that of information that will be garnered, and I think it's going to change how we proceed with politics going forward. But most importantly, it's time to look back and see, will the Democratic Party adjust? Will this be the point? You know, we talk about that peaceful transition of power between President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump. Will we begin to see a peaceful transition of power amongst the establishment Democrats and younger people that are looking to establish themselves in the political arena? Because we have a bit divide in the Democratic Party right now, and we have our own turmoil of individuals that are looking to serve. So Tuesday night was just sobering, and I think that it was a wake-up call, you know, but I still believe that we live in the greatest country on this earth, and that I do believe that for the most part that most Americans, you know, want a balanced and fair system where mm-hmm. you know, if you work hard and if you do what you're supposed to do and if you follow the rules, you too can be successful. And so I think that we should not allow this election to put a dimmer on President Obama's 8 great years.
All right. I don't know if it would. I don't necessarily. I know for me, I won't say it will put a dimmer on his legacy, but I think that I'm unsure about the future. And I know I'm not alone in that, but you know, you just, and it hasn't been a week and he is still the president elect, but I'm unsure. And I'm trying to figure out how we move forward now that this decision has been made. But I don't know. I mean, I can just say I really don't know. Tuesday, well, I was just walking the earth. Like, right, it was just,
right.
Let me deal with it. I mean, Wednesday. Let me deal with this on Thursday, because I just didn't even want to deal with it on Wednesday. Yeah. And now that we're here on Sunday, you know, I'm better, but I still just, I don't know. I'm just still saying I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
People still in shock. But, you know, the demographic that I'm most concerned about are our young folks.
Mm-hmm.
We still have, you know, young people that are concerned and scared and afraid. And we don't need them to be afraid and scared. We need them to understand this is our political process in America. And there are consequences if we do not participate.
Right.
There are consequences if we don't make sure that our voices are heard. So, you know, that's why today I think it's awesome that you and I with the help of some amazing guests, Mr. Dominic Perkins, who has served on several elections throughout here in the region, Congressman Sanford Bishop. He recently worked on Jim Barksdale candidacy for U.S. Senate. He's also worked on some local races. He helped me with my race when I ran for city council. We're going to look at some of these numbers, and then we're going to have Representative Carolyn Hughley coming here and to give a word, you know, to the people of Columbus mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. where we're headed and what we should do and what we should look out for. Because right now, I think we need leadership.
Yeah, we need definitely.
Okay. So we'll step right in. You ready for the
Might
show?
Might as well. Let's do it.
All right. Well, we have with us today one of my great friends and just an amazing, brilliant guy. I haven't seen anybody else here locally that's able to crunch numbers like this guy and really look at where your voters are and how you get to them and how you make things happen. And we're going to look at some local races that are relevant to us here in Columbus and in the region. And we're going to talk about what happened or, you know, to the extent that they deserve more conversation. We're going to look at it. And Mr. Perkins, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here. I know Sunday after the election and you're getting off a very hard fought Jim Barksdale campaign for candidate for Senate. Just for a second, if you will, just talk about that experience working on a statewide senatorial campaign.
Yeah, it was actually an amazing experience. I've been on the campaign since I started. My official hire date was June 1st. Started a little bit before that. So it's been a long, you know, 6+ month campaign. It was, of course, statewide, 159 counties, 6.2 million or so voters to deal with. So it's a huge, huge operation. But I learned a lot of great lessons about campaigning and politics and things like that. Of course, you know, the race didn't work out how we wanted it to.
Yeah, I think Jim had like 41% of the vote, right?
He did, yes. And Senator Isaacson had about 55% of the vote. Considering that we were running against someone who's been in office for as long as he is, you know, he's very entrenched, and he enjoys the benefit of being the incumbent. It was difficult to say the least, but I still think we did a good job, and we made our presence felt and moved Senator Isaacson on a couple of issues, so I think our work still...
Now, Senator Isaacson had more votes in the state of Georgia than Donald Trump.
He did. Yes, he did. Yeah, he actually took more votes in his race than Donald Trump did overall, which I think speaks to, you know, there's several things that could be in play. Part of it is Hillary Clinton may have had some crossover appeal, so she took some moderate Republican votes. Or it could just, you know, could be a number of things, but I think it may have something to do with Hillary Clinton's crossover appeal and being able to pull some voters.
And speaking of Hillary in Georgia, she only lost Georgia by 200,000 votes. What message do you think that's going to send to Democrats as we look forward to upcoming races like the gubernatorial race in two more years and a few other races here?
Well, I think the message it sends is, you know, that's a big improvement from races in the past. It's also an improvement from 2014, from the 2014 gubernatorial and U.S. Senate races that took place. We also saw great strides like in Gwinnett County, which is one of the largest counties in the state. Democrats took Gwinnett County. So that's a huge shift and a big shift in the right direction. So
that is big.
Yeah, it is.
That is very big.
Yeah, and so I think that's an indicator to people that, you know, Democrats are in play, that we're starting to make moves in some counties mm-hmm. that have traditionally been large Republican strongholds, that we can kind of start winning some of the big counties in the state and really, really put the state in place. So,
well, you know, we had some hot state policy issues, Janae, this year, and one was the Opportunity School District.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember we had Attorney Katunga Wright here, and we talked about the ballot questions, and Amendment number 1 would have given the governor and the state the ability to take over local schools and the leadership. And Mr. Perkins, what was the result of that?
The result was 60% no. So 60% voted in opposition to it, 40% in favor. And so it was honestly not a shocking result. I really wasn't expecting it to pass because there were so many unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. It left too much, there was too much up in the air and too much open for speculation. And so I think people were just inclined to vote to keep things as it had been versus, you know, bringing about this big change, you know, which would open the door for takeover of schools, privatization of schools, shutting down of schools. There's way too many different things that were out there that I think people were just uncomfortable with.
You know what I appreciate about this? Mm-hmm. Is oftentimes we see these ballot questions written in favor of the person who wants it, so that they think that an uninformed voter would just go in and just vote yes.
Right.
But this debunked that, and it showed that our voters pay attention.
Yes. Yep.
They know what's going on. They're listening to the issues, and they said, no, we do not want the government to take over all local schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were very clear about that. Yep. Now, Amendment 2 did pass with 83%. That was the safe harbor for fund. Amendment 4 passed with 81%. And a disappointment to me personally is Amendment 3 passed with 62% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And that's going to allow our government to choose a panel of people that will be the watchdog, if you will, oversight over all judges, which previously that was a neutral body, and you know, you didn't have to worry about political influences. Now with friends being appointed, you know, not saying, well, you know, we got some very respectable judges, but we've also had to remove some. Yeah. And it makes you concerned about those that we may need to remove, and now we can't remove them because they have that political firewall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does that do for us as a state?
It's definitely concerning, and I think it points to it's an extension of the power grab that has been taking place in the state. There's been this continuous attempt to, you know, we now have a Republican governor, we have Republicans, you know, pretty much down the ballot, and now we're getting into, you know, messing around with judges and doing things like that, and essentially putting up a political firewall, and as you said, allowing them to do whatever they want to do. And so I think that's definitely concerning when you have partisan politics that's starting to inject itself into what should be, you know, for the most part, neutral bodies. So.
All right. And I'm still kind of confused. Well, I guess I'm not really confused by that amendment, but mm-hmm. I may have to agree with Teddy on that. I don't know how I would feel about, like you said, the political being over it, so to speak. Yeah.
Political appointees.
I don't,
you know, watchdog entities should be neutral.
Yes.
Right.
They should be neutral, and they should be a group of folks that the people can put trust in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start politicizing that and you start losing the trust of the people, why even have the watchdog group?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose
mm-hmm.
of it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's what we are with that.
It's mm-hmm. essentially pretending to have a watchdog
group. Yeah.
It's not really one.
Yeah.
It's just saying, go and watch over the things we tell you to watch over.
It's a phrase my grandma used to say, and I'm not going to use the term she used. I'm going to use the clean
Please
term
don't.
On the radio.
And
it says, don't pee on me and say it's raining. But you know what she probably would say. And that's what we have here. And that's what we do not need in politics.
Essentially, yeah. Essentially, that's what it is.
Especially for our judicial body, which, you know, when you have nothing else, you should be able to go to our courts and get justice. But when some of those individuals feel that they can do what they want to do because now the party or the group that would remove them is now politically charged and your homeboy going to take care of you, mm-hmm. that's not good for the people.
And speaking of the people, I kind of want to move on. We're going to touch on the Muskogee Clerk of Superior Court. But I was watching a little bit last Tuesday night before I went to sleep. And it was about the Muskogee County Sheriff's Office. And I want to make sure I got this right because it looks like Donna Tompkins. Did she win?
She got the most votes.
But
in order for her to win, she would have had to get a majority of the votes. She didn't get 50% plus one.
Okay.
She got 44% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll be going into a runoff with the current sheriff, Sheriff John Darr.
Now, because I heard briefly, I came in on a story about her. Was she just came, I don't want to say came out the blue, but they were saying something how she, because the way they were saying it on the news, like she just kind of appeared, so to speak, and she was doing really good amongst people and people wanting her to win. And me being new to the city, you know, I didn't know much about that. What was that situation?
Well, my understanding is that she's recently retired from the sheriff's office. So she was a lieutenant in the sheriff's office.
Okay.
So in terms of her motivation for running, I can only assume that maybe from her time being in the office that she she felt that it was a good political opportunity for her to bring about, you know, whatever changes she perceived needed to happen in the sheriff's office. So.
But let's talk about the backside of that whole race. Now, you know, our current sheriff, John Darr, historically has run as a Democrat.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
And this year, he decided to run as an independent. He's still a very popular guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he decided to run as an independent. And, you know, in which he has the certainly the right to do so. I don't think that necessarily meant he's abandoning the Democratic Party. I think it was a strategic decision for this election because when you are an incumbent, which means when you're already in office, you don't have to get the required signatures that independent candidates are required to get in order to be on the ballot.
Okay.
So he was able to be an independent candidate, skip the primary that was back in March, and come straight to the general election here that happened in November. So that left the Democratic ticket wide open for Donna Tompkins, which means this runoff is going to be a pretty big showdown. Will the people continue to stand behind current incumbent John Darr, or are they going to go in a new direction? That's the question we'll be answering. And you mentioned the Clerk of Superior Court race. Democratic Representative, one of my favorite people, Bishop Ann Harvey. I love her to death. She was victorious with 94% of the vote. What's the guy name who ran?
The write-in against
him? Mike Garner.
Mike Garner ran a write-in campaign
against Bishop Hartman. He attempted to get on the ballot as an independent but couldn't secure the signatures. Mm-hmm. Then he filed a lawsuit to prevent him from having to acquire those signatures. I don't know what the result of that was, where he at least threatened to sue, according to the Legend Choir. Mm-hmm. But Ann Hartman, she sailed to victory with 52,000 votes, and it's going to be interesting to see the changes that she bring forth in the Superior Court office.
Yeah. She won her primary, the Democratic primary, with a fairly nice victory.
Against Linda Pierce, who was an incumbent at the time.
Who was an incumbent and had been in office for 20-plus years.
Right.
So she ran very well, had a lot of support. I will say I'm slightly biased because I was an advisor to her campaign. But she ran a great race, and I'm very happy.
I mean, how can you not love Ann?
Yeah, she's like,
she's
great person.
Such a sweet person. And caring and really cares about the community.
Yeah.
So we are fortunate to have her in that capacity, and I'm looking forward to working with her whenever I can. But we did have a few regional races that we just want to mention. House seat 138 in Americas, Democrat Bill McGowan won that race. House District 151 out of Lumpkin and Cuthbert, Gerald Green with the GOP won that race. And we certainly want to acknowledge our Congressman Sanford Bishop for the 3rd Congressional District. Congratulations to you, sir,
yes, sir,
and your successful election. And out of the second congressional district, and out of the 3rd congressional district, Drew Ferguson, former mayor of West Point, he was successful at becoming a congressman. He's going to be a freshman congressman there this upcoming year. And so we had some hot election stuff right here in Muskogee County, Janae. Tuesday night was a very busy night.
It was, on a local and a national level. You know, I didn't get to vote in this. I was absentee, Missouri.
Okay.
So I did vote in Missouri, but I didn't get to vote locally around. But, you know, it's interesting to watch it fold out and meeting some of the people and seeing the people that's been in office, the new people that are coming to office. So it's definitely interesting.
Right. Well, today has been a great conversation. Mr. Perkins, thank you so much for your time today and coming and talk with us about these election results and your expertise, and you know, you're a young man, so I'm sure you're gonna be around for a while. And
definitely.
We may be calling on you as we have more conversations and as we maneuver through and just watch where the country goes. So keep us lifted and keep working with us. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. This is an important discussion, and you know, people need to hear it, be part of it. So I appreciate you allowing me to be here.
Definitely. And we're going to continue the conversation with State Rep Carolyn Hughley. She's coming up next at Sunday Conversation.
A promise was made. A promise that hit the beaches of Normandy. A vow that captured Iwo Jima. A contract that weathered Tet. A pledge that stormed the desert in Iraq. An IOU that braved IEDs in Kandahar. A promise was made to America's veterans. DAV fights to keep that promise so all veterans and their families get the benefits and support they earned. For help, visit DAV.org. Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed.
what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up all the teachers, talk to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation.
It's Teddy Reese.
Janae Renee. We definitely got to thank our guest, Dominique Perkins, for stopping through. And we're just going to continue the conversation. In the studio right now with us, we have State Rep Carolyn Hughley. How are you?
I'm great. I hope you are.
I'm as good as can be. So we want to talk to you about, you know, really the election this past Tuesday and everything like that. Just my first question to you, because I know a lot of people on that particular Tuesday, myself included, it was just kind of just like shock, you know, on a national level and a local level at some of the decisions that were made, some of the votes that were cast, some of the winners. What did you say, or how were you feeling on Tuesday? Let me ask you that.
Well, I stayed up half the night because I couldn't believe it. That it was actually happening, and I kept waiting for, oh, this has to be a mistake. Mm-hmm. But of course it wasn't, and it's an election, and that's what's to be expected sometimes. You're gonna win some, you're gonna lose some, and it's unusual for the party in power with the presidency to be able to hand that off for more than two terms. So mm-hmm. this would have been the third term for the Democrats, and that doesn't normally happen. But we were hopeful. Mm-hmm. We were hopeful to have the first woman to be elected as President of the United States. But I think there are a lot of things that went into what happened on Tuesday night.
You know, you're absolutely right. It is very rare that that happens, and I think the last time we experienced that was Reagan's two-term and then George Bush coming in after him, and so that was a rare occasion. But George Bush only served one term.
Exactly.
As a result of that, but as a state representative who has represented Columbus well for quite a while now, you have seen to yourself transitions of elected power and party power under the Gold Dome.
Yes.
Can you just reflect on that and how the party has managed and still stayed strong to Democratic values and keeping, you know, the party issues up front?
Well, actually, the House Democratic Caucus had a pretty good night on Tuesday night. We had several of our members who were running in majority Republican districts. It was about five of them. We won four, we lost one, and then we picked up two seats that were being currently held by Republicans. So we had a net gain of one. So in spite of all the things that happened Tuesday night, we were still able to move forward and increase our numbers by one. So we were not shut out, or we didn't take a step back. And so we were encouraged by that, because what's going to happen is Georgia is going to change district by district.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Polling place by polling place. If one individual talking to another individual, that's how it's going to change. So we can't get lost in what happened nationally, because what goes on in the state and local governments are so very important to the everyday lives of our citizens.
And I think a number that was certainly encouraging was that Hillary Clinton ultimately lost Georgia by 200,000 votes.
Exactly.
And Obama lost Georgia by 400,000 votes. And I think that's really reflecting on the demographic shift in Georgia, what you were talking about, that slow change. So how can we, what's your message to Democrats right now that may be a little discouraged, but we need them to stay motivated and stay involved and stay active with the party, because we're on the cusp of something great here in Georgia?
I would say to everybody to look forward to 2018, when we're going to elect the next governor. And looking at the numbers from this Tuesday's election, we can see a path. Mm-hmm. For us to have a Democrat as governor. But it's going to require all hands on deck. It's going to require everybody working to make that happen. And it's going to go community by community, precinct by precinct. We got to have the good old-fashioned volunteers who are willing to go out there, engage with both voters, make the case for why we need to have this change, and don't give up.
And how do you get the youth involved, really, or not the youth, but just majority involved on a local level? You know, everyone gets excited about the presidential race, but then a lot of people don't understand or realize how important local, you know, elected officials are. How do you get them to care about that, so to speak?
Well, actually, you know, in spite of everything that happened Tuesday night, Columbus, Georgia did very well. All of our Democrats either came out ahead or they won.
Okay.
And that speaks volumes. Columbus is a very blue city. We are a very blue county, and we have been consistently. So if Hillary Clinton had performed nationally the way she performed here in Columbus, Georgia, we would be singing a different song today. Mm-hmm. So I can't say anything negative about the work that was done here in Columbus. Our organizers worked hard. They were knocking on doors, they were making their phone calls, and the results of the election reflect that. Now, can we do more? Yes, we can do more. Mm-hmm. My frustration is, why is it that people of color have to be motivated to vote when we look at our history? We're just two generations removed from not being able to vote at all. Mm. And we talk to young people and they act like, you know, nothing is going on.
Right.
So my question to young people is, why should you need to be motivated? People, I grew up at a time when my mother took me to the doctor. There were two waiting rooms at the doctor's office. One for the colored children, one for the other kids. And that was not that very long ago. I just lived in a small town. You know, change comes late.
Right.
Right.
To small areas.
Right.
So I don't need to be motivated to participate in the process, because politics determines who gets what, when, where, and how. And unless you're at the table or unless you're part of the game, you're out.
And, you know, that's a very, very good point, and probably a conversation for another show. We could talk about that an entire 30 minutes about the generational divide right now between millennials and the older generation of the Democratic Party. But I think it's something we're going to have to address very, very soon, because if not, we're going to find ourselves in a situation to where we don't have anybody on the bench ready to step up, ready to take that leadership role and take it to the next level. But I want you to, if you will, speak as a mother, as an auntie. Are you a grandmother?
Yes.
As a grandmother, to those mothers whose children are, say, asking them questions like, should we be scared or should we be concerned, and then reflecting on all the negativity that they've seen on TV, you know, even though our children can't vote, they are observant and they know what's going on. How do we protect them? Because this is where it begins, early, and making sure that our kids are involved civically and giving them the solid understanding of your civic responsibility and not being afraid of the electoral process or engaging.
Well, we have no reason to fear being engaged in the electoral process, because if more people had participated, you would have a different result.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to my children that Donald Trump is president-elect of the United States. He is not God, and God is still in charge.
Amen.
So that's the first thing. So there is no need for us to fear. But we do have a need to work, and we have a need to become engaged. We have a need to educate ourselves on the issues and act accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
We have a need to encourage others to do that same thing. We have a need to volunteer. You spoke about having a bench, but when you're on the bench, you got to do the grunt work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you're not going to be out on the field, but you got to do the grunt work. You got to know the plays. You got to do your homework in order
to be on the team. You got to practice with the team.
You got to practice.
You got to practice with the team.
You got to practice. And so that when you are called up to get into the game, you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be ready otherwise.
Right.
And so that's why I encourage our young people to get involved. And you got to come out of your home in order to get involved. You got to do more than roll over and send out a tweet or post something
up on Snapchat photo.
Yeah, all of that. You got to do more than that. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit more engagement than that. And we have to remember that not everyone is in the same place that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we forget about the fact that we have people in all different levels and all different stations. And we have a responsibility not only to climb ourselves, but to lift others as we go.
And that's so important because you have many people that want to get involved. You have single mothers working two part-time jobs to keep the lights on, to keep the family fed. You have grandparents that are raising grandchildren, you know, because the parents of those children failed to do what they needed to do. Those people still care, though, and they still want their voices represented by individual who understand what they need, and that's the component of going to the people, like what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Getting out there, being involved, and trusting the process. Well, wow, that's a very strong message. What message do say something to the people of Columbus? Just give them a word of inspiration or encouragement as we move forward. This is just day one. He's still president-elect. He's not even sworn in yet. And the country is in a somber move. We're deeply divided. So many sharp comments on social media and other outlets. And we're America. Regardless of how people feel, we still live in the greatest country on this earth, sharing freedoms that you probably will not find anywhere else. And so the key is to bounce back. Representative Hughley, help us bounce back.
Let me just first say that I was so very proud of Hillary Clinton and the way she spoke today, and our president, as he talked about our Constitution requires a peaceful transition of power, and he's prepared to do that. But I want all of us to realize and recognize and look inward. What did I do to make sure that the outcome I wanted happened? And some of us are not going to be satisfied with the effort that we put into this outcome. Did I send out a tweet? Did I call somebody? Did I take somebody to the polls? Did I help educate somebody about what was going on? We have to take it personally. And until we do that, when we fail to exercise our voice, then other people do all the talking. And what they're interested in and what we're interested in is not necessarily the same thing. So I applaud anybody who has something that they're concerned about and they go out there and they work at it and try to get the result that they want. That's what this democracy is all about. So our challenge is to make sure that we come back together as a community, because our community is much spread out than it used to be. You know, some of us don't come on certain parts of town, and we don't have a connection to what people are going through. We gotta look out for all of our citizens and come together on a common agenda and work that agenda. And unless we're ready to do that, then we're not going to see the kinds of results that we would like to see. So it's going to require all of our organizations, our churches, our NAACP, our Urban League, our sororities, our fraternities, our social clubs, our coffee groups, our bridge clubs, whatever we belong to, we have to come together and talk about those things and work toward a common goal. And quite frankly, we got to stop worrying about who's on first, because there's enough work for all of us to do. And that's something I never worry about, who's on first, because the right people will get elevated to the right places at the right time if everybody's working together.
My Lord.
All right.
And you're absolutely right, and every little bit helps. If you look at how the small margins that Hillary Clinton lost by some of these states, out of millions of votes cast. I mean, to lose by a couple hundreds in this state or a couple thousands in that state, and to think that those votes could have been made up in a very small metropolitan area, probably the size of Columbus. They were right there. The votes are right there. Representative Hughley, we are very appreciative of your dedication and your sacrifice to the Columbus community. You are one of our jewels, and we greatly appreciate you for your hard work and all that you do to make sure that not only the people in your district, but folks all over Columbus are well represented. And we thank you for your time, and you're greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you, and I thank the people of Columbus for the opportunity to serve. And we're looking forward to the future. And the only thing that separates us from a bright future is hard work.
Yeah, you heard it.
Hard work.
Representative Carolyn Hughley, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for stopping through Sunday Conversation. It's Janae Renee and
Teddy Reese.
And again, that's been Sunday Conversation. Join us next Sunday on all of our stations, K92.7, Foxy 105, WOKS, AM 1340, and of course, Praise 100.7. Have an amazing Sunday. The views and expressions of Sunday Conversation are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporation, advertisers, nor their staff.